Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and I'm excited to have another great panel and to talk about a fun topic. Joanna Brooks and I were talking. Hello, Joanna.
Howdy.
We were chatting about what might be a good topic, and we started to brainstorm what's happening in the news or events that are coming up. And she and I are both members of the board of directors for the Sunstone Education Foundation, and its symposium is starting next week. And as we chatted a little bit more, we kind of hit on the idea that a lot of the people that we interact with here in the Mormon Matters and Mormon Stories podcast communities, when we'll bring up things in personal conversation or whatnot, we'll mention resources that are available on particular topics in either Sunstone Magazine or Sunstone Recordings or Dialogue Journal. A lot of people seem to get confused. They've maybe heard of them, maybe they haven't heard much of them, but they didn't know a lot about it. So we thought it would be good to kind of have an informational podcast and discussion. And who better to join us than the editors of both Sunstone Magazine and Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. So in addition to Joanna, we have Stephen Carter, who's with Sunstone, and Christine Haglund, who's a regular here on the Mormon Matters podcast, who is the editor of Dialogue. So let's dive in with quick introductions. Joanna, you want to give some typical shtick here about who you are or anything else that you want to bring up?
Are Mormons allowed to do shtick?
This whole podcast is shtick, isn't it?
Oh, I love me some Mormon Yiddish, I'll tell you. Hi, I'm Joanna Brooks. I'm always glad to be on Mormon Matters with Dan, and especially this week with Christine and Stephen, who I admire very much. You can read my columns on Mormon life and politics at religiondispatches.org. I also have a bi-monthly column at Feminist Mormon Housewives called Ask Mormon Girl.
Cool. And Joanna, I know you're not in Utah today, but today was the official Pioneer Day celebration versus yesterday being July 24th. Are you wearing your bonnet?
I'm away from home this summer, and I left my hot pink bonnet signed by Carol Lynn Pearson back in San Diego. I'm ashamed, but I was texting my sister all morning, keeping track of her celebrations in Utah, and happy Pioneer Day to all our Mormon Matters listeners. My favorite day of the year. Oh, I made funeral potatoes last night. Does that count?
There you go. Good stuff. I think that works. Yep. Christine, would you remind everybody about a little bit about your background?
Sure. I'm the editor of Dialogue. I live outside of Boston with my three children, a couple of whom are still awake and maybe making noise in the background. And I blog at By Common Consent as well as editing Dialogue.
You definitely do, and we're always glad to have you. And Stephen Carter, you're new to the Mormon Matters podcast, but I think most of our listeners will at least have heard of you. I know you've written lots of award-winning essays. So you seem like you own all the writing contests. Now that you're editor, you can't win the Sunstone. You can't win those ones. But I knew you wouldn't say anything about your writing accomplishments in your intro, so I led with that. Would you tell us the rest?
I started editing Sunstone Magazine about 4 years ago, and I've been having the time of my life. I spent a long time in Alaska, and I spent some time in Wyoming, and then I came back to Zion, Orem, Utah, over where the rich people live. It's a pretty great place.
You're saying that you live in the rich part of town, or there's lots of rich people in Orem, and you're not among them?
Well,
I think that you could recalibrate your sarcasm meter, Dan.
No, I knew there was sarcasm there, but I wasn't.
If we're going to do shtick, we're going to need a lot more moxie from all y'all.
Okay, good. Well, and especially if we're kind of, this podcast isn't so much a topic that we're going to dive super deep on, but I am kind of hoping that we'll say stupid things and call each other on it, or at least to get some entertainment going here. So I'm excited for some disagreements and people saying dumb things like I just did. So,
well, I could give you a slightly more interesting background if you wanted it.
Do you want to? Okay.
Well, it does have something to do with the podcast. So,
okay.
When I was in college, I was working in the Center for the Study of Ethics, and I was lucky enough to get to work for Gene England as his administrative assistant, and it was actually there that I got hooked up with Sunstone and Dialog for the first time, because he was a founder of Dialog, and he was on the board of Sunstone at the time, I think. And so it was really interesting, because up until then I was unaware that there was like higher and interesting conversation going on about Mormonism. I was kind of a little bit disillusioned with the church at that time. I was kind of like, boy, this is a really boring place to be. Nobody ever has any interesting discussions, until I met Gene, and suddenly I found out there was an entire world of interesting discussions, of vigorous discussions, of moral discussions that were going on in the Mormon world. And all I had to do was go subscribe to Dialog and Sunstone, and suddenly, this was the pre-blog days, though.
Right. No, what you've said there is, I think, the situation that Joanna and I were talking about there. This is a long, long conversation. Dialog, Christine Wett, founded in 1966. Hello. Yeah, that was in my brain. I didn't come out my mouth right. But 1966, so certainly that. Sunstone came along in 1975. And these discussions have been going along a long time. And I'm like you, Stephen. I just sat down in the Arizona State Library and read Dialog, because I had been craving that kind of conversation too. So it sort of I was awakened to it during my college years as well. So Anyway, so Joanna, you and I, let's sit back but ask interesting questions and add our own two cents here. But I'd love to have Christine kind of lead off with a history of Dialog, a Journal of Mormon Thought, and we'll throw in a few things here. And then after that, we'll kind of get a feel for the origins of Sunstone from Stephen. So fire away whenever you want. But Christine, if you don't mind starting, we'd just love to hear how you'd introduce Dialog to somebody who's barely heard of it or has never heard of it.
Sure. It was, as you mentioned, it was founded in 1966 by Gene England and Wesley Johnson and a few other graduate students at Stanford and in the Northern California area mostly. And from the beginning, it included essays and fiction and poetry. And in their first issue, Here's what they said about what they were hoping to do. They said, "Dialog is not a journal of conservative opinion or a journal of liberal opinion, an evangelical journal or a journal of dissent. It is a forum for the exchange of research and opinion across a wide spectrum." And I think it's important. It's almost hard for those of us who've grown up in the sort of post-correlation era to get back into that mindset where it was possible that an independent and unsponsored journal wasn't necessarily an act of dissent. I think now we sort of think that anything that doesn't come out of, you know, the official church press must necessarily be, you know, trying to be provocative or somehow iconoclastic. And that just wasn't the case. It used to be the Correlation Committee wasn't really active until 1961. So, you know, 5 years after that, things were still in flux. And the people who founded Dialog had grown up thinking, you know, had grown up with all kinds of sources for thought about Mormonism. There were lots of ad hoc manuals produced by the different auxiliary organizations of the church. And so anyway, its intent was not as subversive as we probably think of it now. And I think that's important to note at the outset.
Good. And let's talk about, you know, the reputation or the perception versus the reality a little bit later as we go and kind of embrace both Dialog and Sunstone on that. But so tell us about how often it comes out, what's typically in one, what is it that you as editor are trying to bring forth, and then or you might even want to start with what are some of the classic dialogue topics that have
So go ahead. When Dialog started, the big topic in the air was blacks and the priesthood restriction, and so almost from the beginning that was a huge issue and sort of provoked the most conversation and the biggest articles, and arguably Dialog's most important contribution, which is Lester Bush's 1973 article on the history of the policy of denying blacks the priesthood, which essentially demonstrated that there was no solid doctrine upon which that practice was founded, that right. It was simply a practice that had grown up with people sort of trying to come up with solutions to practical problems, but there wasn't any doctrinal necessity. So that was a really important article that Dialog did. Another important, well, several, I'll just sort of rattle off a few topics that have been important. There's been important treatment of Mormonism and science, evolution controversy at BYU, the sort of history of that, as well as the contemporary issues around it.
And by the way, it is the 100th anniversary of that controversy at BYU this year.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to get a discussion going on that one of these times soon. So.
Okay, you need my dad. He wrote one of the early articles in Dialog called Science and Religion, a Symbiosis.
Cool, thanks for the lead. I'll talk with you.
Yeah, and maybe this is it's not the best point to mention it logically in the flow, but because he was involved early on, his article I think was in 1974, I grew up with Dialog. I literally cut my teeth on issues of Dialog that were hanging around my parents' coffee table. So that's a little bit different experience from most people. I always knew it, and we were sort of allowed to read it as soon as we had finished all the standard works, which we were expected to do by the time we were 12. So I've known Dialog for a long time, which has been helpful to me, actually, to have always had that as a feature of my religious life. And another area where Dialog has done important stuff is the ramifications of higher criticism and other contemporary biblical scholarship on Mormon understandings of scripture. There was a lot about the sort of anti-communist stuff in the Benson era, both at the time, the exchange between Cleon Skousen and Lou Midgley is a classic, and it makes all the sort of laments about polarization between liberals and conservatives in the church in the 90s look really sort of really tame and mild by comparison. The rhetoric there is just deliciously over the top. And then later, Gary Bergara and Michael Quinn sort of revisited that history and the history of Benson's anti-communist activity. Dialog has been important from the beginning in getting women's issues and women's history on the table. In 1971, Claudia Bushman and Laurel Ulrich and a bunch of other women, mostly in Boston, put together the famous pink issue of Dialog, which is a collector's item. It's the rarest issue of Dialog, and we hardly ever have extras of them, and it's much loved. Then later on, there have been important articles about academic freedom issues at BYU, ecclesiastical abuse, and post-manifesto polygamy, Joseph Smith's involvement with folk magic. So all of those are topics that have been treated in articles in Dialog, as well as fiction and personal essays. There's some really classics, I think, of the Mormon personal essay genre that were published in Dialog originally, and that's been an important contribution, I think, to Mormon literature there, and poetry, and off and on there have been sermons published, and I reinstated that feature when I became editor. It'd been missing for at least a couple of editors' terms, and I really think that's an important place where Mormon thinking gets done, is over the pulpit, and so I've put it back in.
So are you calling for listeners who've written great sacrament meeting talks to submit them? Okay.
Absolutely. Good. I'd love to have them. Dialogjournal.com.
Good. I was just going to ask, you've been talking about all these great articles. How do people find those? And so dialoguejournal.com and right. then just search. What do you recommend?
There's a big search field right at the top of the banner because we wanted it to be really clear that our archive is the thing that's valuable on the site. So it's right there at the top. And all but the last 2 years are available free to download as PDFs. And the search engine works beautifully most of the time. And, you know, it's all there. And then the most recent 2 years are available to subscribers online. Or, you know, of course, you can get the print journal still.
I'm a subscriber.
Christine, can we go back? I want to hear you talk a little bit more about growing up with Dialog. Because I didn't. And like many people, you know, I discovered Dialog when I was in college, you know, as part of my, I call it the second puberty. You go through the puberty on the outside and no one tells you there's another one. And it's even worse. And it's the one on the inside.
That's pretty good. Right. I like it.
Yeah. So my second puberty happened at BYU, the puberty on the inside. That's when I, you know, was in a wonderful context, discovered Dialog. And I think that's what happens to most people. We, you know, if we grow up in a fairly observant, mainline, non-curious in a liberal way household, then we kind of hit a transition period in our faith, either in our 20s or kind of in midlife crisis when things start kind of falling apart and the wheels need to be screwed back on the bus. I'm just curious to kind of hear from you how you think growing up with access to this richer conversation about Mormon history, Mormon thought has, you know, affected the shape of your faith life or faith journey, as we sometimes call it.
Yeah. I was kind of a freaky little kid. I didn't have very many friends. I was very earnest and studious.
That's always the sign of great things to come.
My dad's a physics professor and my mom was an English teacher. So we had a kind of thinky household. I wouldn't say that I didn't devour Dialog as a teenager or anything like that, but it was always there. And my family was very observant and even very strict in its practice. Mm-hmm. I still, it's funny, yesterday I came home from church and was having guests for dinner, needed to cook and stuff. And so I went to change clothes and I still will put on a skirt. Like I'll put on a casual skirt when I get home from church, but you know, I wear a dress all day on Sunday, and we were that kind of Mormon family and started fasting when we got baptized. And my dad was the bishop for a lot of the time that I was growing up, from when I was about 6 until I was 12 or something like that, 7 until 12, 13, and then in the stake presidency. So, you know, in many ways, we were this very mainstream, mainline, very orthopractic family. But I never had the sense that there were questions that were off limits. I had my very first theological crisis was when I was 5 and we had family home evening. It was around Easter time. It was about the resurrection. And my dad thought it would be a good idea to read the Brigham Young quote about the father standing at the grave and calling forth the bones of his family. You know, it's the
sort of the ordinance of resurrection.
Yeah. And I got totally freaked out and started worrying about people who got eaten by lions. Like, how could they be resurrected if their bones weren't all in one place? And so that was my first theological crisis. But the next big one that I remember was when I was about 11 and read The Giant Joshua and had my sort of polygamy, my first of a few polygamy crises. And rather than saying, oh, don't worry about that, or, you know, you'll learn about that later, or, you know, giving me some brush off answer, my dad said, yeah, those are, you know, difficult questions. And here are 5 books. Here's one from anti-Mormons. Here's one from fundamentalist Mormons. And here are a couple of mainstream Mormon histories of polygamy. And, you know, let's read these together. And that was sort of the approach to everything. And so I really didn't know that there was something to be afraid of about Mormon history or theology or I didn't grow up with that sense that there was anything taboo. And in fact, I caused some problems for myself when I got to college and, you know, raised my hand in Sunday school and said something about Joseph Smith translating with his face in the hat. And
oh, man.
There were gasps, awesome. And I was like, whoa, what? You didn't have family home evening about that?
That's too great.
you know, I think that's been very useful to me because I never had the sense of having been betrayed, lied to, or kept in the dark. You know, I didn't know everything because I didn't bother to go look always, but I wasn't afraid to look, and I didn't have the sense that I shouldn't. And that's been really helpful to me. And it also has meant that I know in a very experiential way in my bones that the solution to troublesome information is more information. It's not, you know, it's not closing your eyes. It's looking more deeply. And that also has been tremendously helpful to me.
It sounds like there's just something very powerful about destigmatizing historical controversy, you know, like you say, by adding more information to information.
Right.
And that's
mm-hmm. And also I think the other thing that was really important was that I learned that it was work to find out about this stuff, you know, like, okay, you can feel better about this, but it, you know, there are 5 books to read at least. And so it wasn't like an easy instant answer to prayer or
putting it up on a shelf.
Cheap comfort of, yeah, exactly. Putting it on the shelf and not worrying about it. You know, the answer was you work through it. And then at the end of that, you know, when probably a year later after we had been reading about polygamy together, and I was still, you know, there's no good intellectual answer to those questions. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing neat about it. And I was still really kind of distressed about it. My dad said, okay, here's the thing. You can have peace even if you don't have answers, and you can keep asking the questions, but they cannot hurt so much. And, you know, and then he talked to me about praying for comfort and for guidance and for the sense that, that God was in charge, even if I couldn't figure everything out all by myself yet. And so the combination of, you know, taking away the fear, knowing that there was work, and believing that one could, in faith, receive comfort, that's a pretty potent way to approach things, I think.
Hey, I am going to nominate Joanna Brooks to interview Christine Hagman for a Mormon Stories in-depth episode grouping, don't you think? Oh, God, that's awesome. Oh,
that's it. That's the whole story. There's nothing else.
It's a good story. I wanted to hear you narrate that through because I think the experience a lot of Mormon Matters and Mormon Stories listeners have had is, you know, either you're in your 20s or a lot of us are in our 30s and 40s and have come to these questions quite late. And a lot of us, after we've, in, you know, grown up with a more, you know, either a put it on the shelf, don't look at complex areas of Mormon history, just keep marching approach. And people feel, you know, especially when they've invested a great deal of their life choices with, you know, orthoprax Mormon reasoning, they feel betrayed. So I think it's really worth it to say dialogue matters and it exists to normalize and dignify and promote thoughtful scholarship and commentary that, you know, takes away, that takes this weird feeling of taboo and its blowback away from the complicated areas of our existence as Mormons, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So subscribe.
That's what I hope. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And it also, it points the way towards how to do some of that work that my dad, you know, taught me how to do. You know, there are articles with lots of footnotes that you can chase down if you need to know more. And, you know, the articles are 30 or 40 pages long. And, I think it's useful for showing that these are complicated questions that need some work to be answered, that part of the reason that we don't get good treatment of them in Sunday school is just that it's too much work and we only have 45 minutes in Sunday school. And, you know, that's of course not the whole reason, but that's part of it, is that it just takes more time than you could possibly have in church or even in seminary or institute. And I think dialogue is useful for showing the depth of scholarship that is necessary and possible and even sometimes delightful.
Dan, can I just ask her one more question?
You can do whatever you want.
Well, no, because, you know, we want to hear about Sunstone too.
Man, go for it, yeah.
The liberal summer camp for Mormon liberals coming up soon. You know, Scott, you know, one thing that I also value as someone who has a leg in the world of academics is, you know, Dialogue is a scholarly journal. It's indexed with scholarly journals. It puts Mormon studies on the map as having a dedicated, not just a historical journal, but an interdisciplinary journal where things are considered in a rigorous way. And so I just want you to talk a little bit about, you know, does Dialogue use peer review and what that means and what that does for the journal?
Yeah, we do.
And what is peer review for people who aren't geeks like us?
Yeah, I suspect that Dialogue's process is a little bit less formal than some academic journals. I mean, I know it's different from the way that my dad's stuff goes through the process for physics journals. But essentially, when I get an article, especially the scholarly articles, personal essays and fiction tend to have a couple of readers, but I don't think of that so much as peer review as just editing help. But for the scholarly articles, I will always send it to at least three experts in the field, and sometimes more.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and it's a blind peer review, so they don't see the author's names, and the author never knows who the reviewers were of their articles. Ideally, Mormon Studies is a small enough world that people do recognize each other's stuff sometimes and know what other people are working on. So I try to keep it blind, and it usually is. I also try really hard where I can to use non-Mormon reviewers, where there's an article that, you know, has enough subject matter to keep a sort of general religious studies scholar or scripture scholar interested without knowing too much Mormoniana, then I'll try to send it to them. Or, for instance, we had an article on the outer limits of the size of the papyrus that the Book of Abraham is purported to come from, and it was a very sort of technical, mathy argument. And so I could send that to someone who was not Mormon and didn't care about the, you know, what it meant for the Book of Abraham, how big this thing was, to just say, hey, can you check through the math on this? So I try to, you know, look as widely as I can. And one of the great things about Dialogue having such a long history is that there is sort of a stable built up of people who know these things and who've been doing it for a long time and who can point me to experts in various corners of Mormon studies topics.
Yeah, and doing this means whatever we read in Dialogue has been like carefully reviewed by experts in the field. And this is not just one person's knowledge. This is a really beautiful presentation of the community's knowledge in its best possible shape.
Yeah, at least that is what we aspire to. It would be
right.
Yeah.
It would be
a different story.
Right. You may not always agree with the argument, but you'd say that at least it's reviewed to the point you say this is good scholarship. This person's following, you know, general protocols, and you know, they're backing up their sources, and they look like they're good sources. And so you may come down differently on how you interpret those, but it's still working out. Yeah. One of the other things about Dialogue that I like is its name really does, especially when it's a really tough issue, you will try to have three or four people in Dialogue in the pages on it.
Yeah, although that's hard to...
It's harder, but it seemed like early on they did it, but they were kind of dealing with all the big issues that, again, we're still seeing us deal with here in Mormon studies, you know, Mormon matters, Mormon stories, podcast land. All those issues sort of had to be wrestled with once, and it seemed to me, you know, Book of Abraham, Blacks in the Priesthood, Adam God Theory, all those different things, when they were brought out by Dialogue, kind of for the first time, there was always a cluster, which I liked.
And I think one of the things that is great about this current moment in Mormon studies is that, you know, at the time when Dialogue started, you could bifurcate arguments into Orthodox and liberal or historic. You know, things did tend to split out in a more binary way. And now that we're in a sort of more broad religious studies paradigm, instead of just history or the sort of more limited sociological kind of stuff, it seems like there's really an array of data. It's not a simple spectrum anymore. It's this huge, you know, wide, broad array. So I can have, you know, three or four articles on a given topic that aren't sort of pro and anti. They're just looking at different angles of the question, and that's really exciting when we can do that.
Awesome. Hey, Stephen, you there?
Yep.
You've been quiet,
yeah,
but we...
Hey, I am not one to overtalk genius.
that was great, and I was great. It was really neat to have that personal glimpse into your growing up years, your formative years there, Christine. So thank you, sure. Stephen. Tell us about
my therapist sometime tomorrow.
Ouch! Too fun, Stephen. Bring us up to speed on what Sunstone is, where it started, what you see it doing today.
Well, you're always welcome to join me in this stand, since you spent a little bit of time with Sunstone.
Yeah, I was its editor for 8 years, from 2001 to at least middle of 2008, so yeah. But no, I definitely want to stay as quiet as I can, thanks.
Well, I'm actually younger than Sunstone. It was started in 1974, and I was a wee babe in 1975, so I do not remember a Mormonism without Sunstone. What's that?
I said, shut up. We don't know how young you are.
Well, you are younger than Dialogue, aren't you, Christy?
Just barely.
Yes. I'm certain of it.
Oh, you guys are all in your midlife crisis, aren't you? This stuff.
Yeah, so Stephen, who started Dialogue and Sunstone and all that good stuff?
You're going to have to make sure that I've got all my facts straight. I know that Scott Kenny was there, and I think Alan Roberts was there. Who else was there?
Well, Peggy was there, yeah.
That's right, Peggy was there.
And again, this came out of the Bay Area.
That's
just
Peggy
like
Stack for the uninitiated.
Yeah, and so this was out of the Bay Area. These guys, instead of Stanford connections, they were all Graduate Theological Union folks there in the Bay Area.
Right, so I want to be like Christine. That's like one of my main goals in life. And so I actually found the first editorial that was written for Sunstone. And what's interesting about Sunstone's beginnings is that it was started for the younger folks in Mormonism. Scott wrote, "May Sunstone attract the best efforts of young Latter-day Saints who, true to the faith of their fathers, that their fathers have cherished, will raise the questions, pursue the discussions, and bear the witness worthy of a living faith that is both intellectually vigorous and spiritually discerning." And I really like that idea. That's the sort of Mormonism that I really wish to move among. One of the things that I like so much about Christine is that she didn't have a lot of downtime like Joanna and I did. You know, we grew up sort of in the bubble, and we saw Mormonism as either pro or anti. But
speak for yourself.
Oh, really? That was what you said at the beginning, wasn't it?
No, I grew up. Let's focus on Sunstone.
Okay, so the
I knew it. I had my issues. It's hard not to be a young brainy girl, even in an Orthodox setting, and not be like, huh, head scratcher.
okay,
but
yeah.
But so, I did grow up in an Orthodox, observant, highly, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing I love so much about what Scott is writing there is that if we did raise our little Mormonlings in a culture where we expected things to be complex, where we were pursuing the discussions and really interacting with our religion as if it were living, as if it were changing, as if it were part of us, we would all be like Christine, and wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be a disaster.
Stephen is throwing some curveballs at us, isn't he?
The choir would be better, but otherwise it would be a disaster.
So anyway, Sunstone is more pitched toward the average college age reader. Like when I dive into Dialogue, sometimes when we get to those mathematics arguments, I kind of scratch my head and I say, I will leave that to those with more intelligence than I. But when Sunstone is being put together, it's more magaziney, and I'm proud to call it a magazine. If you go in and read our stuff, you will be able to understand what's going on. And we rarely have equations. I think we had one equation. I don't remember specifically. But we've
your
had
copy
some
editor, or your layout editors must love you more than they love me.
You know what? I am my layout editor.
There you go. See, if I were the layout editor, we wouldn't have equations either.
Oh yeah, that definitely has a big part of it. So we've had some pretty landmark articles as well. For example, Linda King Newell's article on washing, anointing, and blessing the sick among Mormon women, and then there was William Wilson's article on the folklore of Mormon missionaries, which is endlessly entertaining. Yes.
Absolutely.
And we've had plenty of discussion like Linda's article on the Mormon concept of a mother in heaven. And then Stan Roberts wrote about making a place for believing homosexuals, and this was at least 20 years ago when this happened.
Right.
So yes. And of course, J. Bonner Ritchie's the institutional church and the individual. He addressed something. I think this was back in 1980. He was addressing something in that article that it seems like all of us run into at one point. We find our spirituality burgeoning, and we feel like the constraints of the church are holding us back. We're going, what's going on? This is supposed to be Jesus Christ. Church is supposed to be helping me along, and I just feel like I'm in shackles. So J. Bonner Ritchie addresses that, and he says, well, look at what it is an institution does. And he helps you to start to skillfully see what it is that churches can help you do and what they don't help you to do. So this is kind of what I like Sunstone to do, is to get into those places where you feel a real pull in many directions. You say, I feel like this is true, but this is pulling me this way. And I feel like maybe there's truth in both directions, but they're pulling me apart. How do I work with this? And so we get people to together who have gone through those kinds of things, who have done scholarship and those kinds of things. And we sort of ruminate. We say, we wrestle. I like to call Sunstone Mormonism's wrestling magazine, because that's what we do in our pages. We wrestle with the tough issues. And they're issues that you wouldn't necessarily talk about in church. Just because so often it involves, you know, personal things about you, and you don't necessarily want the bishop to bring you in and say, oh, I'm worried about you, Brother Carter. You want to feel like this is really important, and I need to discuss this with people who will take this all seriously and also hopefully be a little bit smart about it. Have I talked enough yet?
No, that's great. Tell us a little bit more. You said it's a magazine versus a journal. What would be some of the things that mean that a magazine has that a journal doesn't?
Well, we do a lot of shorter pieces, like we've been serializing a biography and process of James Talmage, and we have a great column from Kurt Bench, who's been a used Mormon bookseller for like 30 years and has seen everything. So he writes about some of his experiences. And we have funny stuff.
Comics.
Yeah, we have comics.
You did an amazing comics issue. I loved the comics issue.
Yeah, there's besides the one issue that focused on it, I would say there's probably, 6 or 8 comics usually in most issues of the magazine would be my guess.
We're kind of New Yorker-ish in that we liked our little single panel comics spread throughout that tickle your funny bone, hopefully a little more than like the Ensign comics tickle your funny bone.
That's still kind of a
low. And you have like kind of the magazine-y feature like you'd see in Time magazine, you know, like births, deaths, transitions, you know, there's the little news section. So you can get that kind of nice gossipy feel from the world of Mormon thought, culture, politics, which we love gossip.
Oh yeah, and the other thing that we have is art, and I just barely like a month ago launched the Sunstone app. So anyone with an iPhone or an iPad out there, you can get the Sunstone app, and you can see the art that that we're publishing in full, beautiful color. This most recent issue, I'm especially proud of. We have some work from Galen Smith that will just knock you off your chair. So that's one of the other things that sort of makes it different from a journal, is we have a lot more illustrations.
But in general, both Dialogue runs great art too, Christine, right?
Right, and we are our Kindle app will be out soon too.
Ooh, oh, good.
Well, that's awesome.
Good. We'll talk about all that at the end. We'll make sure that everybody knows how to subscribe and all the different options and what your plans are there. But yeah, but both of you are black and white magazine insides, but you do have color covers. And then Stephen, what you're saying is some of the stuff that you may run in black and white inside, you have on the app, at least run it in color.
Yeah, actually, this last magazine was the first one that I actually designed first in full color and then went to black and white afterward.
Great.
So it's really a beautiful thing to see.
Well, neat. Well, I'm excited for those brief introductions. And if we can stay with Sunstone a little bit longer, Stephen, would you introduce the symposium and how it sort of fits in with not necessarily this symposium that's coming up? We can talk about some of the things that are going to be in it next week. But just in general, the whole idea and the fact of the Sunstone Symposium and how it sort of feeds into the magazine and just how it makes the foundation itself tick.
Yeah, the symposium is actually in a way, I think it was kind of the birthplace of like Mormon stories and Open Mormon and those things, because I remember being there with John DeLynn and guys like that, and we all went in to at least I did. I went into my first Sunstone Symposium about 5 years ago. And I was telling my wife, yeah, I'll stay there for a day or two. And the symposium's usually 3 days. But at the end of the second day, I called her and I said, honey, can I stay one more day? Because it was amazing to go to the symposium. I always get just a little bit teary whenever I think about it. Because in the symposium, you have people who... they're all, like I said, wrestling. And when you get to talk with people who are wrestling, you're talking with people. And you start to have conversations where you discover things about yourself, where you start to see the life-giving parts of the church and of the things that you've discovered. And you also find out what it is you need to slough off. And you start to make these friends that you stick with forever. But yeah, we have a ton of really great stuff. It's where a lot of Sunstone's articles are born, and it's where some of Dialogue's articles are born as well. So like this upcoming symposium, do you want me to just say
let me add just a bit. It's generally 3.5 to 4 days long. As Stephen mentioned that. When I left it in 2008, we would always have more than 100 different sessions. It was spread over, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 sessions per time slot, so you could always find something that sounded interesting to you. And then our goal, of course, was to have many, many things that were interesting at the same time. And, of course, then Sunstone has recorded all those sessions, and they've made them available, over 10,000 basically 60 or 90 minute recordings are available for people to look through on the website, basically from this history of the symposiums. Like Dialogue, Sunstone keeps back a couple of years worth of sessions and magazine issues, and those are for subscribers or for purchase and stuff. So it's this huge event where people come together. For those who came to the Mormon Stories Conference, you all enjoyed a day and a half. Think of 3.5 days, and then think of 800 people to 1,000 people, and then, you know, having topics that you can choose from each hour. So there's something to be said for both models, but Sunstone Symposium are these huge gatherings. So go ahead, Stephen, whatever you were going to add in about the current one, if you'd like.
Yeah, this symposium that's coming up the 3rd through the 6th of August, we have some papers like Passive Aggression Among the Latter-day Saints, Evidence from the Wasatch
Front. Oh, goodness gracious. Give me to that session.
Your heart, Stephen. There's no aggression in.
I didn't say aggression. I said passive aggression.
That's
Everybody's
why I said
really
bless
nice.
Your heart.
Yeah, that's right.
We're having one called the Mormon Sex Ed Project, creating a gospel-based resources for healthy sexuality. Uh-huh. And Flunking Sainthood, Jana Reese is going to be there. And she's awesome. We all know Jana.
Yeah, she's been on this podcast three or four times. It's been great.
And we're having an interesting panel discussion discussing the Book of Mormon musical with some very interesting people who will be diving into its various perspectives. And one of the fun things that's happening, our theme this year is Mormon artifacts and material culture. And so we have one session about the transition of LDS meeting houses from beautiful to functional, which sounds awesome. And we have one on Mormon board games. When I was a kid, the only thing to do, because we didn't have any dialogues in our house, was to play Celestial Pursuit.
And Jots and Tittles.
That's right.
What?
Jots and Tittles. Yeah, there you go. You guys are already thinking. Anyway, never mind. Go for it.
I got to make Dan blush at least once a podcast.
Sussex, yeah.
We're also having a very interesting one on Mark Hoffman's legacy 25 years later. Mark Hoffman was the guy who was forging all those early Mormon documents and eventually blew some people up to cover his tracks, but it didn't work. And that's going to be really interesting. We've had a bunch of news reporters trying to get the scoop on that one. We're also having one called Parody Never Faileth, The Role of Humor, Satire, and Kitsch in Mormon Culture, which is supposed to be funny. I'm really hoping that it will be.
Cool.
So anyway, those are some of the fun ones.
And then in between the sessions, you get to hang out and gossip with people you've only maybe seen online in the Bloggernacle, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And really enjoy each other's company and build friendships that bring people back for years and years and decades and decades. And so it's almost as much worth going for what happens between the sessions as it is for the glorious content itself.
Yeah, and you can meet Mormon rock stars like D. Michael Quinn and Joanna Brooks and Christine Hagland and Dan Weatherspoon and Gary Bagara and, you know, guys like that. You can meet people who you've only seen on the page.
Yeah. Christine, are you coming out this year?
Yeah, one of my great Sunstone Symposium moments was my first one or maybe the second one I was at. And I was in the ladies' room at the same time as Jan Shipps, and she called me up the blouse, and I just almost get so excited.
Oh, man. Well, glad that you're on naming some names. Yeah, Joanna's speaking this year on a couple of panels. I know I'm on a couple panels and responding to a paper. Other Mormon Matters people
I'm doing
that
one
we've
too.
Had. Are you? Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. You are. I'm sorry. I missed
that's
that on my
okay.
note. Yeah, really. The best one is session number. Let's see. Where are you there? You're actually not in the preliminary program. That's why
yeah,
I missed you.
My arm was twisted later.
Okay, cool. So that's why I didn't see you. Teresa Edmonds, who we've had several times on the podcast. Jared Anderson, who many people know both from this podcast, Mormon Stories, and just he's, you know, the mega guy that writes all the comments in the podcast community and MO 2.0 community. Jared is giving an all-day workshop introducing people to the New Testament. So it's about 7 hours of really cool instruction over the course of Wednesday the 3rd. So he's doing that. And then, of course, like Stephen said, Michael Quinn's coming. Colleen McDaniel, who's professor at University of Utah, she's keynoting. Phil McLemore, who many will remember, Andrew Ainsworth interviewed for Mormon Stories. He talks a lot about meditation and Eastern spirituality, and it's mixed with Mormonism. We're going to have both Margaret and Paul Toscano. Levina Fielding Anderson, Robert Reese, Janice Allred, a bunch of folks from the Community of Christ Church. So those who are interested in our cousins, the former RLDS folks are going to be there. So it's just going to be a fun gathering. And for those of you, I know this is pretty late notice, but Weber State University from the 3rd to the 6th of August. And if not, be looking for audio and video recordings that you can grab.
You know, and just last week I was corresponding on Facebook with someone who emailed me who sort of knew in their faith transition, and she'd never heard of Sunstone. She said, oh, I wanted to go to Mormon Stories Conference. I said, well, what about Sunstone? You come to Sunstone? She said, what's Sunstone? So there are a lot of folks for whom this is a new place. So come on up, hang out. And, you know, one of the nice things is if you're in faith transition, you know, and you feel so behind, you feel like there is so much content to catch up on of this conversation that you may not have been exposed to before. The scholars and other people who keep track of the conversation in Sunstone and Dialogue have been, you know, taken care of. If you go to Sunstone, you'll be kind of immersed in it for a little while, and you'll find a new way to kind of reinvigorate your relationship to your faith, basically, because you'll have so many new points of contact, so many new interesting questions, and a community that's talking about these things in a really, you know, animated and supportive way. So come on.
Very cool. Well, we've accomplished most of what I'd hoped for this night, which is a brief introduction, like you said, Joanna, and like we began with. There's so many people who are new to these questions that it's good to kind of get the feel out there. But let's address for a minute with both of our editors the controversies over Dialogue and Sunstone. The fact that they're seen as edgy or dangerous. There's a T-shirt of a couple of guys rock climbing. You know, a cartoon that Pat Bagley drew that Sunstone has of a couple of guys rock climbing, and they're hanging by the cliff face, and one of them turns to the other one and says, "You read Sunstone? Isn't that dangerous?" You know, so there's that perception out there. Why are these groups considered edgy, and is there fire where there's the smoke that says it is? Christine, do you want to start?
Oh, I was just going to see if Stephen wanted to start.
How about it?
What's interesting is that perception is rooted in a much different time and place. When Sunstone and Dialogue were going full tilt back then and getting that kind of perception, there was absolutely no blogosphere. There were these two places. There was also like Exponent 2, and there were just very few places where this independent conversation was going on. And independent conversations do tend to destabilize a culture, but I think that they also tend to enrich a culture. And so now we have 10 million blogs with 4 new ones being born every day, who are talking about things in a much edgier way in some respects than Dialogue or Sunstone ever did. And we don't see that kind of perception coming onto the blog. So a lot of it is just historical context.
That's a good point, Christine.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what I was saying earlier about Dialogue having started in the pre-correlated or just barely correlated era means that it didn't mean to be as subversive as it then seemed by, you know, the late 70s when correlation was really in full swing and we had begun really conditioning people to expect everything about Mormonism to come from the top down. And, you know, as Stephen points out, I think we've already, you know, relatively quickly in historical time moved away from that era. Like, Mormonism has escaped correlation. And so, you know, Dialogue and Sunstone are no longer the only elements of that conversation. I do think it probably has to be admitted that at least in Dialogue's history, there have been moments and people who had an agenda to push the church in a different direction than they saw it going, or, you know, who on certain topics wanted things to go differently and were agitating. And, you know, that's just not perceived as something that faithful Mormons do. I think there's an argument to be made that it's exactly what faithful Mormons should do, is to be, you know, trying to catch the vision of Zion and bring people along to their vision of it to the extent that they can. And that if we were all doing that, you know, it would be a very different thing than a top-down imposed unity, but it would end up being a truer unity in the end. So anyway, that's a whole another argument. But I do think that it's not only the history that has resulted in some of that controversy, that some of it really is content that was, you know, either subtly or not subtly opposed to church policies or you know, questioning fundamental church doctrine in ways that were very uncomfortable for, you know, for lots of people. And I think that's probably the price of coming to difficult truths and dealing with difficult questions, is that sometimes you're going to, you know, you're going to be on the wrong side and you're going to offend people and you're going to overstep. And that has certainly happened.
Yeah. And let me just quickly add in Sunstone's case, there's the added volatility of a symposium with,
yeah,
you know,
the 4-day
with,
open mic night.
You know, yeah. I mean, early on it was 35 to 40 sessions and then we're up to 100 sessions and people with microphones say a lot of things, and you can do your best as the program planner to sort of say, is this person have a constructive tone? Do I sense that they're a good thinker? Do I sense that they've processed, you know, this in a good and healthy way? And sometimes you guess wrong, and sometimes it just comes from the audience, and then the press generally covers the sessions that have the most heat, and the next thing
you
know, perception spins out of control. Go ahead.
Well, you know, and I remember, you know, back to those days, you know, I mean, we need to say for the record that there was a time in the 1990s when a statement came out from the church to avoid, and they used the word symposia. And right after that, a lot of the BYU faculty who may have once participated dropped.
Exactly.
And that has been responsible for some of the outlaw reputation of Sunstone. And I remember attending the symposium in those years, you know, and I was like a 21-year-old, you know, writing a really bad time in the history of the church to be a feminist, right? And you know, I remember walking around the Sheraton in downtown Salt Lake City and crying for 4 days. That's just my trademark. I just cry. But, you know, there is a place in our communities, you know, for there to be an honest record of our experiences and an honest sharing of our experiences. And thank heavens, the Sunstone and Dialogue have been those places, for better or for worse. You know, has it been played sensationally sometimes? Sure. But, you know, Mormons, we care about our faith. We care a lot about our faith. Our worlds are completely invested in our faith. And it's not surprising that these important independent forums are become the place to process things going on in our history that aren't accepted as subjects of conversation within the institutional church. You know, that we have these places to go, those of us for whom these are major concerns. So, you know, I think we should own it sometimes that Sunstone is where, you know, important but difficult conversations happen, and that dialogue is a place for, you know, thoughtful but difficult considerations. Without those, our religion is terribly impoverished.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think another sort of historical movement that works against dialogue and Sunstone being comfortable is that I think we're in an era in the church where certainty is valued more than it all, you know, it hasn't always been so important to be so certain about everything mm-hmm. as it is now, and or was especially in the night, you know, and as it is recently, I guess, not
yes.
necessarily right this minute. And the thing about academics and people who are, you know, prone to need things like Sunstone and Dialogue is that, at least for me, it's a much more tentative, you know, I can write an essay, and I have written essays that I don't believe anymore, and I'm fine with that. I, you know, I don't intend the things that I put in print to be the last word on anything. I don't think of dialogue as sort of speaking the truth from on high. It's exploring, it's wrestling, it's asking, and it's a much more tentative approach to talking about the gospel than, you know, than we take in Sunday school. In Sunday school, we want there to be answers, and I want there to be more questions. And so I think just sort of that temperament and that orientation to writing and talking and thinking can get us in trouble with people who are used to the format that we talk about things in church.
Cool. Yeah. Sorry, did I cut you off?
Nope.
Okay, sorry. All right, let's kind of head towards closing here. Stephen and Christine, you have an audience here of several thousand people who are listening to this podcast and more in the Mormon Stories community, and we'll be blogging about this. What would you like to see as a better integration or a bringing together of the online blogging, podcast conversations, you know, the MO 2.0 Mormon Stories community, Facebook groups, et cetera. What would you like to see going forward that that could kind of bring these two worlds together a little bit? Either of you.
I like to think of print, the print medium as the place where good ideas get even better. I really love the fact, I think that if Sunstone and Dialogue subscribers of 20 to 30 years ago could have looked forward to see now, they would say, oh my gosh, the ability to have conversations with people so instantaneously on so many topics with so much freedom, they just would have been in heaven. I think this is one of the greatest times in Mormon independent thought, because we have so much ability to be able to talk with each other so much. And so what I'm hoping print will be able to do is to take the excellent thoughts that are being nurtured on the blogs and in the podcasts, and to be able to draw them out into their full stature and print them so that they can sort of last forever. I always get a little bit worried that the entire internet will go down and that everything that we've done will be gone, even though I'm sure that will never happen. But that's my idea.
So bringing thoughts into their full stature. What are you basically saying there? I'm hearing a pitch for editors.
Oh, I would love
to. We want to keep our jobs.
Well, during the time when I was writing a lot of articles and essays for Dialogue and Sunstone, I appreciated to no end the insight that the editors were giving me. This is something I don't know how many people really get to experience, but when you write something, well, when I write something and it's new and it's there, I say, wow, I want to show this to everybody. And then if I hold off for just a little while, then I start to see its weaknesses. I start to see the places where I could actually go into the topic more deeply, actually find more important stakes. And when you have a good editor or someone that you trust to help you really go into your thoughts, to really spend the hours and hours and hours and days and days and days of finding the other points of view that will enrich what it is that you're trying to birth, then you get something that's worth putting onto a piece of dead tree, something that's worth sending hundreds of years into the future for people to look at. This is something that doesn't happen without a lot of time, without a lot of energy, without some people with real knowledge of the craft working together can do.
Oh, that's man, I'm so idea. Glad. I thought that I feared that you might go an hour without saying the craft.
Come on. Being mean to me.
Yeah, I think Stephen's right. I also think he doesn't fully appreciate the joys of blogging. He's a little bit of a blog snob, aren't you, Stephen? Admit it.
Hey, I'm on Wheat and Tares. I blog but there.
We'll call it a carbon fetish.
Oh man, that's great.
I have been thinking about this a little bit, and I think that what happens in the blogger knuckle, and I don't know a lot there, Joanna, maybe you can talk about sort of what podcasts do and what the recording is like, but the conversation in the blogger knuckle reminds me a little bit of when C.S. Lewis is talking about lovers who spend a lot of time gazing into each other's eyes.
Yeah.
Like eventually that's eventually unsustainable, and that what really binds people permanently is to be looking outward together, you know, on a common journey in a common cause, working together in a common cause that is outside of their love for each other. And the blogger knuckle, I think, is that sort of, you know, gazing into each other's eyes and having these intense conversations that are, you know, informed mostly by what we've already got in our brains and what, you know, is happening in the conversation between us. And I think what Stephen's making a push for and what I would make a push for is to turn out a little bit and to be engaged in a common pursuit of building those ideas and of finding out what people have already thought and committed to paper and sort of deepening that knowledge together. Because I think ultimately what is so great about the Mormon communities that have sprung up around different publications is that they are communities in search of truth and in pursuit of ideas. And so I think that print and sort of long form can help us be sure that we are continually enriching those ideas and the search for truth so that we don't end up just, you know, gazing ridiculously into each other's eyes or our own navels.
One, and here's one thing that people really, I mean, I think especially people who are new to blogging don't understand. Gosh, that sounds pedantic. Oh, well. Is that
have you read my blog post about quit reading blogs and go read a book and don't talk again until you've read at least these?
I want to talk pedantic. Well, I mean, where it comes from is I've actually been, I mean, you know, I think most people are aware that I have a day job and I'm an English professor, and a lot of our youngsters need to know how to write for online mediums. And so I've been thinking about developing coursework for that since I'm doing a bit of that these days, and to kind of reflect on what I've learned. But one of the main things I've learned is, you know, the pace of the blogging world, especially someone like me, I have to generate 3 blog posts a week, which is a lot. You pull every bit of perspective you have into writing, even what seems like a casual one-off post, you know? And that perspective comes from study. And it comes from the more substantial kind of background reading and perspective forming that takes place in longer forms. And Nate Silver, who's a great political commentator who I admire, and in his advice to some of the students at Columbia Journalism School, said, if you want to be a writer, the thing you need to do is read first. And read and read and read and read. Like, at least the first 50% of your preparation is reading. And that's the long form conversation that Dialogue and Sunstone represents. And so a lot of what you get on the Bloggernacle and even in these podcasts is like a verbal animation of everything we've learned from the people who came before us. And that can only be done sometimes in longer forms. So, you know, that's my pedantic rant. But podcast, Dan, I figured out how podcasts fit in all of this. Podcasts is for people who... thank you. Podcasts are for people who multitask, right? They're for the commuters and the exercisers who don't have a desk job that they can like keep flipping back over to buy common consent while they're supposed to be reading spreadsheets. That's who we serve.
And yeah, symposium sessions, sent recordings work great too. And that's for me. My podcast listening is in my car. So absolutely. And when I'm mowing the lawn. All right, I wanted to give Christine and Stephen a chance to tell listeners how to submit things to them if they so desire, or what you're looking for, kind of the hoops to go through if anybody wanted to become involved in submitting something. Stephen, you want to start?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, if you want to email me a submission, send it to info@sunstonemagazine.com, I-N-F-O, as in short for information. At sunstonemagazine.com, and that's also the URL that you go to find our website and our huge archives of back issues and symposium recordings.
Are you willing to have somebody submit something to you, or at least inquire about, I'm thinking of writing this, would you have interest, that sort of thing too?
Oh yeah, yeah, okay. I'm open to all that stuff.
Great.
And I'm also very willing to be a hands-on helping editor if I see seeds of great thoughts in your head. I have some writers who have great thoughts but are not great writers, and it's my privilege to help them to make their thoughts clear.
So, yeah, and I can vouch for Stephen's midwifery skills.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things, too, was to take the really good ideas and help them be heard in the best and most robust way that they could. So I love what you just said there. Christine, how would you submit to Dialogue if
sure.
interested?
Go to dialoguejournal.com, and there's a tab right under the top banner that says Submissions, and we have a fancy little submissions widget that will take your information and your address and all of that stuff, and then you can attach your submission. And that is because I am hopelessly disorganized, and it really helps me to have all the submissions there in one place. People are welcome to email me at editor@dialoguejournal.com, but just know that I'm hopelessly discombobulated, and your chances are a lot better if you use the submissions widget. I think one of the places we're hurting a little bit is that blogs tend to take that personal essay writing impulse and give it more immediate gratification than, you know, waiting for it to come out in a quarterly. And I would really like people to turn their blog posts into something longer and more substantial and send them in as personal voices essays.
Yeah, I would love to do a workshop at a symposium sometime about how to turn blog posts into personal essays, because I think that would enrich our literature a lot. We have so much practice going on the blogs, and I want to bring it to fruition. It would be awesome.
Yeah, you can start with me.
Very cool. And then both of you, what do subscriptions cost? What are the options in terms of print versus electronic?
For 6 issues of print, it's $37. But that's the reason why I put together the app, because you can get 6 issues for $9.99, and it's in full color, and it's delivered instantly, and it's gorgeous.
And I know you're doing the current ones, but are you working your way back towards the older issues?
Yeah.
Okay. How far are you now?
I have about 10 back issues up. I've picked the ones that I think are the coolest, and I've been putting them up first.
So they're all ones from my editorial era, of course.
Oh yeah, because you made all the great ones.
Yeah, just I bet there's none. So that's cool though. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead and so $9.99 for electronic. Keep going.
Right, and soon we're actually going to have a web based one as well, and it's like $17.99 for 12 issues and $24.99 for 18 issues. It's just a steal. And back issues are $1.99 if you're bored in church or something and you have your iPhone or your iPad. You just got to go to the App Store and look up Sunstone, and the app is only 99 cents and you get the first issue free. So,
and I think there's probably an argument to be made that purchasing it on Sunday isn't really a violation of the Sabbath because no one is actually doing any work, right? It's all just electronic.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
We don't have any rules about pushing buttons.
No, pushing buttons is fine.
Okay. Well, they push my buttons at church all the time. just cool. Christine, how much are subscriptions and what are the options?
Yeah, Dialogue subscription is $37 a year for the print journal. There's an electronic subscription that is $25 right now, but I would really like to drop that. And if we had, you know, enough people express interest and write to me with a suggested price point that would make them subscribe electronically, I bet we could do a deal. And I don't know what our Kindle and iPad app price will look like, but I imagine it'll be similar to Sunstone's.
But it's in the works.
It's in the works. So go to dialoguejournal.com and there's also a subscription button there that you can do it all online.
One of the things that I want to quickly say is, for those who are interested in the Sunstone Symposium that begins August 3rd and goes through the 6th, if you go to the sunstonemagazine.com website, you'd be able to click on a button that'll take you to all things symposium. You can read the entire program, see what's coming, and then there's a 4 or 5 different ways to subscribe. You get a break if you're a student. You get a break on the price if you're a first-time attendee. You get a break on the price if you're a subscriber to the magazine. You can go for 1 day. You can go for all 4 days, basically. The workshops on Wednesday the 3rd are a separate registration than the rest of the symposium. But anyway, you can learn all about it right there, and we certainly can engage you on the blog afterwards. So anyway, you guys, closing thoughts. Let me start with Joanna and see if she'd like to offer any closing thoughts about this subject of, well, whatever it is that you haven't said that you want to say.
I'll see you in Ogden at the Sunstone Symposium, and if you come, I'll buy you a root beer float.
That's too fun.
To the first, let me see what's in my bank account. My first 10 Mormon Matters listeners who self-ID will get a root beer float from me, And, you know, this, I mean, Sunstone and Dialogue are just important. They've supported the kind of conversations we're trying to have at Mormon Matters for decades. And they're just a crucial part of our indie Mormon world. So big love to both of them.
Great. Thank you. Christine, any final thoughts?
No, I have already opined far more than anyone could possibly be interested in 1 hour. Joanna, I can't wait to meet you. We've never
Serious, you never met in person. That's very interesting. That'll be fun.
You can come, people. You can come witness.
You can see it.
That's
you can
right.
Film it.
We'll go slow motion then running. The room. That's fun. Stephen will have a camera. Anyway, and Stephen, any closing thoughts?
Well, come read Sunstone if you want good thought, if you want good writing, if you want to dive deep into your religion, into the tension-filled places, and get your funny bone tickled as well. Also, on the app version of our magazine, we do have embedded video, embedded audio, image galleries, stuff like that. It's quite an immersive experience. We also have links and stuff like that. But thanks so much, Dan. I really, and Joanna, appreciate you putting on this little podcast. I certainly hope to get a whole bunch of more new friends out of this.
Yep, everybody friends Stephen Carter on Facebook. So, hey, well, thank you very much, you guys. I think this has been good and important. And listeners, please come to mormonmatters.org and make comments and engage our panelists or ask questions. And we'll do our best to have a great discussion. And while you're there, please subscribe to Mormon Matters Podcast. You'll feel really, really good about yourself to contribute $2 or $5 or $10 a month. I know you will. Thanks. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
All is well. All is well. All is well.